Well, William Cooper was a man that I'd heard about 20 years ago as an Aboriginal activist who fought for human rights for his own people. And I heard he was even the founder of a thing that a lot of us know around Australia called NAIDOC. But I had no idea that coming from a Jewish background, he also had a link to my people. And the day that we found out the story that he was the one that actually stood up to Hitler via the German consulate in Melbourne was a part of the William Cooper story that people were just blown away by.
What was his Jewish background?
No, he wasn't.
With the connection.
Oh, the connection to Jewish background. So William Cooper was an avid reader. He was born in 1860 in Yorta Yorta Territory in the junction of the Murray and the Goulburn Rivers, the border of Victoria and New South Wales, basically. And he was self-taught. He went to a mission. It was called Maloga. He learnt a lot about life at his primary school. He had a very good Christian educator, a fellow called Daniel Matthews, who encouraged the children in his charge. That's one of the few stories where the mission actually treated the Aboriginal children really well. I always portray Daniel Matthews is a good guy in the story. So a lot of people don't regard missions well in that respect. And he learnt to read and write. Apparently, Daniel Matthews wrote in his diary that he learnt to read in about 3 days the ABC. He even taught it to his younger brother. And when he was a bit older, he became a very busy letter writer. He wrote letters to everybody he could. And I'll just jump up to 77 years later, in 1938, he was reading the Argus newspaper, and he was reading on the 11th of November. He wanted to read about the 20th anniversary of the end of World War One, which had ended on the 11th of November, 1918. And he had a very strong reason for wanting to read about that, because he'd lost a son, an Aboriginal son who didn't have any rights for his own, fighting for a country who died in Belgium. And he wanted to read and have some memories of his son. But instead of the front pages of the Argus on the 11th of November 38, all being about the 20th anniversary of the end of World War One, they were all about war erupting again. And there were photos of an event that had happened two nights earlier in Berlin and right throughout Germany and Austria, which you were describing a moment ago, called Kristallnacht. And he couldn't believe what he was reading. And the more he read about it, he realised, this isn't random. These Jews weren't attacked in these synagogues. He didn't even know really what a Jew was. He'd never met a Jewish person. He was 77 years old. He'd moved from the Murray to Melbourne at the time. He was living in Footscray. And he was blown away by what he called racism. And he even said to people at the time, I know what racism is. I've lived it for 77 years. And he waited for a week, for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, for world leaders to stand up to Hitler. He waited. He was sure surely they would read the same headlines that he would have read. Their advisors would have told them. But 3 weeks went by, hardly a thing happened. I think I've read that US withdrew its ambassador for 10 days, and 11 days later he was back in Berlin. But there was no serious response, and he just couldn't tolerate it.
So, Michael, what did he do?
Yeah, good afternoon, Vista listeners, and thank you for that, Abe. My name is Michael McDonough, not Michael Cooper.
Sorry, Michael.
No, you're okay. Since 2009, since my grandmother, William Cooper's granddaughter, died, the Jewish community in Sydney, especially the Sydney Holocaust Museum, has invited me and my mother and showed us great respect to do acknowledgement of country in front of several survivors from the Holocaust. And me and Mum are so proud to do it, and we're very honoured to meet those Holocaust survivors. And the respect that they've shown my great-great-grandfather is just, it's just overwhelming at times. And you know, I'm really proud. And any time I get asked to go somewhere and do something in honour of being William Cooper's descendant, I'm absolutely honoured to do so and to live up. I suppose if I could be half as good a man as he was, I'm doing okay, because it's going to be really hard to live up to that kind of a legacy.
In fact, Lish, Michael and his mother drove into Canberra this morning from Sydney, where they live, to be here for this evening's event and for this interview this afternoon. That he's a very, very dedicated descendant. There's actually a Jewish saying which is used in other expressions, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I am sure that Michael and his mother, Barbara, and Uncle Bordy, the grandson who I know well, who lives in Shepparton in Victoria, are really good examples of people whose values are very much the same as what their ancestor William Cooper's was.
Now, William Cooper, as you said, he was incensed by what he read in the Argus about Kristallnacht, and the world wasn't doing anything. Right. What did he do then?
Michael, do you want to take it?
Yeah, I would love to. Well, he was shocked at the thought that genocide was happening in to another people in the other side of the world. And what he done was he was so incensed that he organised a protest letter to ask the German government to cease their persecution of their fellow German citizens, because after all, they might have been Jewish people and all different types of people, but at the end of the day, he acknowledged them as German citizens. And he was in Australia, and his Aboriginal people were also fellow Australians. So I thought, I really think that he
could see the parallel.
He had a kinship with them and seen the parallel.
Another race where some of their citizens were being treated second class. He could see that. He smelt what racism was. He knew what it was. And so he developed a letter with his committee, which his committee was called the AAL. It still exists today. In those days, it stood for Australian Aborigines League. Today, they use the name Aboriginal Advancement League. It's the same acronym. And they met in his home in Southampton Street, Footscray. His lounge room was their meeting room. He was a volunteer. He was on no money. He was on a pension. He was a 77-year-old man. In fact, he almost couldn't get on a pension. There was a racist story about that one as well. And he didn't have power in the house. He used to use candlelight to live by, so that he could save the money for an extra postage stamp for a protest letter to a prime minister or whatever he needed to do about Indigenous rights. So a few days before the 6th of December, we believe it was the 4th or the 5th, it's one of those 2 days, they had a meeting of the AAL executive, and they listened to Uncle William's report, because he was the only literate one amongst them. He had been taught how to read, and he explained to them that, look, from what I can see, there's nothing going on, and they all voted that we, the Aboriginals of Australia, should do something. Now, they had no rights of their own in this country, but what they did was they passed this motion that Michael just quoted, and they made, very politically savvy, they made an appointment with the ambassador of Germany. It was actually called the Consul General in Collins Street, Melbourne. At the time, it was 419 Collins Street. It's not there anymore. And they made an appointment for 11:30 in the morning on Tuesday, the 6th of December. And instead of just William Cooper turning up with a letter, a whole lot of people, we're not sure of the exact number, marched with him from his home in Footscray. And when the Nazi soldiers saw them, they actually, unfortunately, they didn't like what they saw. The meeting was cancelled. The doors were barred. And from what we know, the letter possibly got given to the guard, possibly got thrown away. But we were able to recreate what we believe the letter was. And Uncle Bordy, his grandson, spent the last 80 years or 79 years until last year trying to get the letter delivered to the German government. And he finally got there, accepted in Berlin at the Australian Embassy, where the German government came. And they finally accepted the letter that was 79 years in the making to get there. And the Jewish community, which I'm a part of in Melbourne and Sydney and Canberra, so many of our communities have got Holocaust survivors amongst them. Some of them are dying, but there are a few left in their 90s now. We, the Jews, regard William Cooper as a real hero. And to be here tonight in Canberra, where a multi-faith network of events being run by the Wesley Mission together with the Jewish community are going to march at 5:30 from one Jewish community centre to the centre of the Wesley community. And apparently a lot of the diplomatic ambassadors and that are coming from embassies all over, because of course they're all based in Canberra. They all regard that honouring the memory of what happened 80 years ago this week is important to do. And the committee decided that they also wanted to honour basically the one civilian in the world who is known to stand up and run a private protest when governments of the world could have done something and didn't. And your great-great-grandfather, Michael, is a real hero of ours.
It sounds like it. My guest this afternoon on ABC Radio Canberra, Abe Schwartz, who is a Jewish convener of William Cooper's legacy, and his great-great-grandson, Michael McDonough, yes, who joined me in the studio ahead of this interfaith commemoration tonight of Kristallnacht, because William Cooper, it sounds like we should all know him as the father of NAIDOC and with this incredible story behind him and as a human rights activist. When did he become an activist, Michael?
Well, yeah, in the early days. He was born in 1860, 1861 on the banks of the Murray River, and what we know in 1885, when he was about 25 years of age, he organised a letter to the Victorian government asking for little allotments of land for his people that they could build a house, that they could grow some vegetables, that they could grow some food, where they could look after themselves, and then they could start to live. But unfortunately, because of the racism in the day, he was refused. And unfortunately, a lot of people that he may have saved back then or may have thrived actually passed away because they weren't given that opportunity. So,
right through his life, he continued being an activist, even into his 60s or 70s, and not just for this cause against. He was known for writing a petition to the king and
asking for a representative in the parliament. In 1937, he asked for a representative in the parliament, and I like to think that he would have been the first Aboriginal minister for Aboriginal affairs, and you know, I'm sure we wouldn't be, the gap wouldn't be as far as it is today if they had proper representation.
They listened to him then. And the only way that the Indigenous voices could really, truly be heard, because I would say this as a Jew, I would want a Jew to carry over my voice. Why wouldn't Aboriginal people want one of their own to carry their voice? So the Uluru Statement of last year or so called for the same thing, and we all know that, you know, Turnbull rejected it. But and then there's been a whole lot of other people over the years that have tried to bring a voice to Parliament. We have got Aboriginal parliamentarians now in states and federally, but we're yet to have, unless someone wants to ring the station and correct me, we're yet to have the words that Michael said, an Aboriginal person as the Minister for Aboriginal Affairs. That's yet to happen, the voice of Aboriginal people. And the Uluru Statement's called for it. William Cooper called for it in the 30s.
How was he received by politicians at the time? All these letters and all this activism.
From what we know, a couple of the politicians really did try to help him and guide him in a certain sense. But obviously, if they're not the ones in the top of the job and the top power, then unfortunately his letter didn't get to the Prime Minister of the day. And it obviously didn't get sent to the king either. So, unfortunately, it never got sent. But luckily for us, Uncle Boydie, with the William Cooper Legacy Project, actually was instructed to hand the letter to the Governor-General, Sir Peter Cosgrave. And when Sir Peter Cosgrave was in Balmoral Castle in Scotland, being knighted by the Queen, he actually got to hand over the letter from
William Cooper. So in fact, so not to confuse, there are two major acts of William Cooper in the 1930s. One was the petition to the king that never got delivered, but Uncle Boydie, aged about 86, was able to do that. He actually met Prince William when he was in Melbourne, tried to see Prince Harry a few weeks ago, but in the end, Buckingham Palace deemed that it couldn't be handed directly. Even though Uncle Boydie had an appointment with Prince William, he had to give it to the Governor-General. But because the one good thing I'd say Tony Abbott did, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to let my politics out, by knighting Cosgrove just as his last act, the three knighthoods that he did, Cosgrove ended up in, Michael says it was Balmoral, not Buckingham Palace, and on that day delivered, because we saw him a few weeks before that, he delivered to the Queen the letter that Uncle Boydie's grandfather had tried to get to her grandfather, King George V. And likewise with Kristallnacht, he wanted to get the Germans to understand what had happened, why an Aboriginal person had protested. So last year, Uncle Boydie went to Berlin and he met with the official representative of the German government. And we did it, in a sense, on Australian soil. We got the Australian embassy to open up their reception room, and we had the reception in Australia, if you will, but in Berlin.
How was it received? Did you go, Michael?
No, unfortunately, we couldn't go, Mum. And
it was received really well. And if you liked it, to your listeners another time, I could actually organise you to get a copy of the audio of that. We might be able to organise that. But it was received incredibly. The Germany of today is not the Germany of the 1930s. And I might just mention that all over Australia, like we're doing in Canberra tonight, there are events going on both this week acknowledging Kristallnacht. Many of them are acknowledging William Cooper's link to that. So the Aboriginal Jewish solidarity, just like Michael's and my friendship, it's strong. And in 4 weeks from today, that date that I mentioned, December the 6th, is exactly 80 years to the day since William Cooper marched in Melbourne. And so 80 years to the day, we're actually going to march his same route past the German consulate. So if any of your listeners happen to have friends, relos, or themselves are going to be in Melbourne on December the 6th at 5:30, they should meet at Footscray or at 6:30, the Flagstaff Gardens. We're going to, on the 80th day, have a solidarity march for Indigenous rights honouring William Cooper on the very day that he stood up for our mob.
It's called Walking Together, Remembering William Cooper. Michael, I hear this incredible story of a man I'm ashamed to say I didn't know of. You know, why don't we know his name and his extraordinary contribution to Australian history and culture?
Yeah, I mean, even some of his family asked the same thing, you know, like I grew up in the 80s and went to high school in the 80s and not one thing was mentioned about Aboriginal people, let alone my great-great-grandfather. And I like to think that if that was mentioned, then I was more aware that, you know, where would I be sitting today? A lot better place, who knows? But I think it's important now that we acknowledge not just William Cooper, but all Aboriginal elders who were upstanders.
So allow me like to use, we should be an upstander, not a bystander. It's one of our taglines, yeah. So many people bystand when they see bullying in the playground or, you know, before the Me Too movement about harassment to women. But if we were all upstanders, like William Cooper was, so yes, you're right, Liz, you should be well known. Mm-hmm. I know in Jewish descriptions we sometimes refer to him as the Aboriginal Moses. Or I've heard him said he should be like the Australian Gandhi or Martin Luther King. But people don't know him. Maybe ABC Canberra can start a campaign from today to help change that.
And you certainly both have.
Little small steps. Yeah.
Is it changing? I understand that Batman in Melbourne, the electorate, yeah.
That was another campaign we took on. We didn't believe we'd win that one, but we did. The Gellibrand in the Footscray area where Uncle William lived, they actually wanted to become Cooper, but they didn't get changed. But there were so many people that were against the name of Batman for various things that were found out about the founder of Victoria, if you will, or the settlement of Victoria and his attempt at a treaty that... they found about the history of Batman back in Tasmania, and he was no longer the name that people thought they were. And there was a lot of Aboriginal activism going on in the area where Batman electorate is. So even though Uncle William actually lived in Melbourne in Footscray rather than Thornbury and Preston, which is where Batman is, from different angles, we pushed the Australian Electoral Commission, and yes, in about 3 months ago, they finally announced. We all spoke at the commission, and we three members of William Cooper's legacy, Alex Katz, Vivian Fink, and myself, we actually addressed the commissioners. Other people did too. The Labor Party supported us in their submission, and most people are very pleased. Jed Carney, the current member for Cooper, is a Labor member. She won the by-election that was all the controversy about a few months ago. She is rapt to be the member for Cooper, and of course it doesn't technically take effect until the next federal election, but we've got some rungs on the board, and again, if Canberra ABC can help us do that, we'd be really, really thrilled to get the campaign going nationwide.
And of course he was the first to organise a day of mourning in 1938 around the 150th anniversary of colonial settlement in Australia.
Yep.
You know, we think that this is a new thing.
Yeah. Many prime ministers have said, why are you agitating about change the date? I'm actually holding in my hand the actual document inviting only Indigenous people to come on the 26th of January 1938, so the same year as the Kristallnacht protests, about 11 months earlier, to a meeting in Australia Hall in Sydney where they were going to talk about why today should not be a celebration of what the Sydney Lord Mayor at the time was calling the sesquicentenary of Sydney, but instead it should be a day of mourning. And William Cooper actually pushed that we should acknowledge the date 26th of January. So that's another interesting contribution to the conversation about that. But instead of acknowledging it as a party and a barbecue, we should acknowledge the day as a day for what it is. So some people I know have said at least make it a day of mourning in the morning. There's a play on the words there. But 26th of January is not, as some prime ministers have said, a new development changing the date. I'm holding the document that goes back 80 years. And if this was visual and not radio, I can see it.
I can vouch for it.
Yeah.
And I think, anyone can understand when you're mourning the loss of your land, when you're mourning the loss of your culture, when you're mourning the loss of your language and the loss of your family members. Like, it doesn't matter who you are, where you live on the earth, if you're losing your culture, your land, your family and everything you live for, then of course it is a day of mourning. So of course you're going to protest. And we shouldn't be surprised that he was protesting, organising these protests back then, because they were facing some really harsh times. And I think they were facing a lot of racism. There's still some racism today in the community, but I don't think it's as much as it was back then. So...